Today we observe our patron feast, the Feast of St. Matthew. And I really like the fact that Matthew is our patron. You know, there are so many saints who have lived such heroic and exemplary lives that it's really hard to think of oneself as measuring up to them. Well, that's not true of Matthew. I mean, Matthew was kind of a low-life individual. So the bar is pretty low. And I feel comfortable with that. I think I can make that bar and still hear the invitation of the Lord. Matthew's gospel was written about 80 AD. That's about 45 years or so after the death of the Lord. And the people who were part of that community were Jewish converts to Christianity. Now, the Jews of Jesus' time regarded the temple as being the most important place on the face of the earth. In fact, they believed that the temple was built right at the center of the earth. Inside the temple, at the far end, was a room called the Holy of Holies. And in that room was a box, a large trunk. And that trunk was filled with the trophies of God's loving care for the people of Israel. That trunk was called the Ark of the Covenant. And inside that trunk were a variety of things, material things, one of them being the staff that Moses carried. Well, above that trunk, above the Ark of the Covenant, there was what was called the mercy seat. And what was believed is that God was present at that point, at that place. And only once a year could the high priest go into that room. That was on the day of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And he would offer a sacrifice, and then he would sprinkle the blood of the sacrifice on top of the mercy seat. And what the people of Israel believed is, in doing that, in the people coming together and confessing their sins and making the sacrifice, the mercy and compassion of God went forth from that mercy seat and flooded all the earth. The temple was a sacrament to the people of Israel. It was there and only there that the fullness of the presence of God was to be found. Well, 10 years before Matthew wrote his gospel, the temple was destroyed. A conquering army tore down the temple stone by stone. The temple was burnt. The Ark of the Covenant was smashed apart. The mercy seat was pulled down, and nothing was left. Well, one can only imagine how traumatic that must have been for the people of Israel. What it meant is that God was no longer present on the earth. This localized presence of God in the temple, the Ark of the Covenant, and the mercy seat, that was all gone. The whole nation was in disarray, struggling to find a way that they could continue to live their religious lives. Well, that's the background out of which Matthew is writing his gospel. This is 10 years later. Matthew is penning this gospel. And Matthew cannot think about the public life of Jesus and the words of Jesus without seeing them through the eyes of a contemporary experience, his own experience. All right, now we get back to the gospel. Jesus calls Matthew, this tax collector. He joins Matthew at table and all kinds of other people, tax collectors and those who are non-observers of the law, come and join Jesus. And the Pharisees are scandalized. They say, why is it that he can do this? And Jesus says to the Pharisees, quoting from the sixth chapter, the sixth verse of the prophet Hosea, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I desire mercy. Well, the implication of that is that men and women, you and I, are called to do the work of mercy, a work that was only done by the high priest once a year and only done in the temple. Now, there is no more temple and there is no more high priest, but the presence of God is to be found where the deeds of mercy are done. Well, that's mind-blowing. That's a glacial shift in the religious understanding of this people. The works of mercy are not just acts of charity or good deeds. They are acts by which God becomes present. That the presence of God is found in the interaction between two people, one doing for the other the deed of mercy. Throughout our history, we have talked about the works of mercy, the corporal works of mercy, and the spiritual works of mercy. The corporal works of mercy are to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to give drink to the thirsty, to house the homeless, to welcome the stranger, to care for the sick, to bury the dead. Those acts are the acts of mercy. Those acts forgive sin. Those acts call down upon the earth the presence of God. And then there are the spiritual acts of mercy. To instruct the ignorant, to counsel the doubtful, to correct the sinner, to patiently bear wrongdoing. Those spiritual acts also call down the presence of God. So what Jesus is saying really to those Pharisees is, doing those acts isn't just a good deed. We don't need a high priest anymore, and we don't need a temple, because the priesthood of Jesus Christ is present in every single believer. Every single believer does what the high priest does on the feast of Yom Kippur, and does that in the acts of mercy that he or she engages in. Well, if it's true for you and for me that we are called to be people of mercy, then it's also true that a community of people, a congregation, is called to do the works of mercy. And that's part of what we celebrate today. We celebrate you and me and so many other people, members of this congregation and those who have gone before us, 122 years of congregational living in which this institution has embraced the work of mercy. And in so doing, calling down the presence of God on the face of the earth. That's terribly important to think about. It's not just volunteerism. It's not just doing good deeds. It's an act of religion by which the presence of God becomes among us. It touches every aspect of life. If you've ever had to plan for the funeral of a family member, clearly one of the things that is generally planned for is a gathering, a meal, a luncheon after the funeral takes place. And we call it a funeral lunch or a funeral dinner. But if you've ever been to a funeral of a Lebanese person, that meal is called the mercy meal. That meal is an act of religion. By going and eating, what one does is honor the person who has died and is present to console and support the grieving family. It is an act of mercy that calls down God's presence. Or if you have ever participated in the funeral of a Native American, after the funeral, again, there is a meal. It is a religious meal. All the family and the relatives and the friends gather, and then someone is chosen, either by drawing lot or some other means, someone is chosen to sit at the head of the table. And that space is reserved for the deceased person. And the plate of food is put in the front of that individual. And that's the plate of food that is prepared for the person who has died. And the person who sits at the head of the table is known as the sin eater. And as those people eat, as that family eats, the job of the sin eater is to eat the meal of the deceased person, and in so doing, to take upon himself or herself the sins of the person who has died, so that now that person is free to enter fully into the life of God. It's the last act of mercy. It's the last act by which the presence of God is called down upon this person. You and I are blessed because in the context of the invitation to Matthew, Jesus really extends an invitation to all and says, in effect, you, by what you do, will make present the healing, life-giving, just, caring, and loving face of God.